From the heart of the Forest City, focusing on the biggest stories in London, this is the Craig Needles Podcast. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
The Craig Needles Podcast here at Classic Rock, 98.1.com, LondonNewsToday.ca, and wherever you get your podcasts, we are there too. The Craig Needles Podcast is powered by our friends over at the Covent Garden Market and at downtown London. Let's talk transit today. And this has been a bit of a hot button issue in the city. We're maybe doing a look into the books with London Transit. A performance audit is what we're calling it. Well, there's no maybe about it. We're going to do it. So the question I have is, what might be fined in a performance audit? And how is that going over at the London Transit Commission? Well, the chair of the commission, Stephanie Marentette, has been kind enough to join us here in the studio on Richmond Row to talk about that today. Hello, Stephanie. Thank you for doing this with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. So let's just get right into what we've discussed here. Council is going to go ahead with taking a look at a performance audit at London Transit. What's your reaction to that? Are you annoyed that we have to go through the books this way? Are you welcoming it? What's your position here?
Honestly, we are not annoyed in the slightest. Doing regular performance audits of this nature are just a natural part of healthy, good governance. I would expect that something like this would happen every 4 to 5 years just to, you know, create a corporate scorecard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just let everyone know sort of where things are at and how things are going. Why do you think, or at very least, why have you been told this is something that councillors want to do here?
I honestly can't speak to the motivations of City Council. But again, I don't think it's unreasonable for this request to be made, because it's completely reasonable and healthy to do a check-in like this just to make sure everything is functioning, you know, optimally, and to uncover whether or not there are places we could gain efficiencies or do better and, you know, make those improvements to the best that we absolutely can.
Is this going to be expensive, do you think?
That's really hard for me to say. I did see the motion that was passed last night, and it did have a line item at the bottom for the city staff to find appropriate sources of funding. We haven't seen any costing, so it would be very difficult for me to, you know, hypothesize on that. But I mean, it is a fairly extensive process. I would imagine
it's a big organization. What's the overall budget in a year? It's a big organization,
it's big.
A whole lot of employees, a whole lot of buses, doesn't matter what the overall budget is. So it's going to take a long time to go through that.
Absolutely. And I would imagine it'd be, you know, fairly expensive. But again, it's hard for me to give you an exact figure on that just because I don't have any costing from the city.
So what do you think they might find, or what do you think that it might be in there where there maybe could be some efficiencies? Has that been discussed with you and your colleagues at the commission about what could be in there, or what interesting parts you might want to take from whatever it is they're going to get out of this audit?
Honestly, I don't think they're going to find a whole lot of efficiencies that could be achieved. We have had audits like this in the past, and there have been very minimal suggestions in terms of, you know, cutting costs or things of that nature. I think that there will probably be, you know, some minor good suggestions that we can consider across the board. And again, we would love to have those, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a major public service provider. We would love to have that feedback, but I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot to find, because we are operating on, you know, sort of the bare minimum funding that we could possibly get, and we're doing the best that we can with it. So I'm not sure how leaner we could be. But of course, if there is some sort of suggestion as to where we could do better, we're definitely open to hearing that.
So they're talking about routing and where the service is going within the city and the efficiencies of that. That's something that's been brought up. I know obviously that would be talked about quite a bit at the commission, is, hey, where are the buses going, and are we getting to the places that Londoners want to be? Do you think that there may be a chance that we want to revisit where some of these routes are going? I know that we talk about that quite regularly.
Right. So believe it or not, we're actually undertaking that exact process as we speak. There was a review of routes done in 2023, November of 2023. And, you know, after that consultation, there was a detailed review in terms of associated service standards and what have you. And that was part of developing sort of that five-year plan that we're working with. And the completion of the 2024-2027 business plan and supporting five-year service plans for conventional and specialized are actually scheduled to be tabled for commission approval in June. So this is something, and I believe that that was actually the first line item on that motion, was sort of like a service review. Mm-hmm. We've already done that. So I mean, we're doing the best that we can in terms of identifying, you know, over congested routes, where we might need more service, where perhaps there isn't a service, where there could be. Those are all the sorts of things that we do in this type of review. And that helps us sort of look at where there could be route efficiencies, routes mm-hmm. improvements, that sort of thing.
I've been hearing that the commission already approved their own audit before the city came in and said they wanted to do one. When did that happen?
Okay, so that's a little bit of a misinterpretation there. And I think there's a lot of
Let's clear it up then. That's why you're here.
Absolutely. Okay, so nothing has been approved yet.
Okay.
What we were doing, so when we hear, you know, council or in particular, you know, the deputy mayor making comments that suggest that there are some concerns with the operation, we take that really seriously mm-hmm. because obviously we want to be a really good partner for the city. There are a lot of important public policy items that cannot be achieved if LTC and the city do not, you know, walk hand in hand on some of that. Right.
I agree.
Absolutely. So when we hear those concerns, we take those very, very seriously. And so hearing that and also recognizing, hey, it's been a while since we've done an audit, we were having very preliminary discussions about should we do our own? Because, again, part of healthy good governance, we haven't done one in a while. Mm-hmm. And also, too, if there are concerns, we definitely want to take those seriously and we want to answer them. So very preliminary conversations had occurred sort of the past month and
in meetings or just kind of behind the scenes,
just general conversations, okay. You know, as things unfold and because, you know, we only have one meeting a month, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So just very general conversations right. about, you know.
Is there a group chat?
No, you can't do that. Can't do that because that would constitute a meeting if you get quorum. Although that would be fun, wouldn't
it? Yeah, it'd be easier.
An LTC group chat. Yeah. That would be fun. So just very general conversations about, you know, do we want to consider this? And so senior leadership did look at this for us. And actually today there's a staff report for us to consider that looks at that possibility. So we haven't actually approved it yet. We just mm-hmm. wanted to kind of explore what would it cost, you know, what would it look like if we wanted to initiate this ourselves, because we want to give our own corporate scorecard to ourselves, right?
Right. Now it would seem superfluous though to do mm-hmm. if we're doing two audits at the same time.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't recommend that we do that because if the city's going to undertake one, I mean, as I'm sure that you can appreciate, we have a very tight budget and those dollars could
Why do we have to pay for two of these?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, probably not if the city's going to do one. But, so that staff report is coming tonight. It's publicly available for anybody who wants to take a look at it. We'll see what we do with it tonight at the meeting. I certainly can't speak to how that discussion is going to unfold. But, there was just preliminary discussions. Mm-hmm. We hadn't actually approved anything.
Yeah. There's been conversations, you mentioned the deputy mayor, Sean Lewis, about the idea of, and he hasn't said, hey, we want to do this, but mm-hmm. he's mentioned, hey, what about bringing trans in-house? And maybe that's something that we can explore. Sure. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I mean, transit is a very, very complex service.
I agree.
Some municipalities have it in-house, some
do not. If you look at Ontario, it's a healthy mix. I'm not going to say 50-50, but it's a healthy mix of some in-house, some not. Yep.
Absolutely. And there are varying reasons for doing it one way or the other. We haven't had, you know, any report or costing or anything of that nature from, you know, city staff or municipal council as a whole. Really, it's just sort of the narrative of one person making that suggestion. In terms of whether or not that's viable, I think we need some serious costing on that, just because of the complexity of the system. I gotta think it would be more expensive to, and this is just my personal opinion, mm-hmm. but I gotta think it would be more expensive to do it that way than for us to operate independently, especially, you know, and I don't fault City Council for this at all. They had one heck of a difficult job this budget cycle because, you know, coming out of the pandemic, everyone was economically throttled. We don't want to tax the bejesus out of mm-hmm. property owners. Property taxes did have to go up. probably they're at their maximum tolerance level in terms of just what people can deal with. And so there were some very real, you know, checks and balances there and trade-offs that had to be made. And there were a lot of organizations that had very real needs for very important services that, you know, city council had to say no to. And I'm sure that they didn't want to do that.
London Transit was among them.
Absolutely. Because I was just going to say, ourselves included, right? Yeah. They had to say no to us. So if they
didn't
were...
have to say no to everybody, but that's... That's a different discussion for a different day.
not my. I don't have a dog in that fight.
I'm not saying you need to.
But I mean, just in light of the fact that we really had to fight for just, you know, a repeat of what we had before with those 18,000 hours, I gotta think that trying to bring an organization as large and complex as LTC would probably be a little bit more expensive than that.
Right.
So when I hear that, what I'm kind of asking or circling around the question of it for myself is, okay, well, where's the money for that going to come from?
Yeah, and there's interesting questions there, like, will you find enough savings in things like HR, IT, management that would offset the cost of, you know, you would have to pay, you would suspect certainly the mechanics a little bit more based on the City of London's contract to pay certainly, I don't know if certainly the drivers, but that would be at least a conversation for the operators.
Absolutely.
As far as what they're going to make. So would you save enough? And maybe that's what we're going to figure out with this audit.
Well, that's,
is would there be enough savings here for that to make sense? And
exactly.
If I were to place money on this, I would be betting no, but I think it's worthy of a look.
Absolutely. And again, this is me. This is pure conjecture from me, just based on the information that I have, right? So in order to actually look at this as a viable alternative, we would need a full costing that shows, again, exactly what you've pointed out. Where are the savings? Where are the added costs? Does it justify it? And I think, you know, anyone can say whatever they like in the media, myself, the deputy mayor, anyone can get up and talk about this. But until we have those actual numbers, we're just... We're not really going to be able to have an informed discussion about this.
Right,
and what
right
looks
now
like.
We're guessing. So we're now going to put some numbers along with the guesses, which I think is a good thing.
Absolutely.
So as we continue to do this audit here, and I don't know exactly when it's going to be done, they want to have this figured out sooner rather than later, I would suspect. Maybe we get into the fall, next budget cycle, whenever it is. Your term on the commission obviously intersects with where this council is. What do you think that the next 4 years or the remainder of this 4 years, so essentially 2 years left, looks like for London Transit for the time that you're going to be on the commission here? What are the priorities and what are we hoping to get done, even with all this stuff going on in the background?
There's a lot of, you know, service upgrades that are needed and that we would love to do. And going back to my previous point, the commission is super grateful for the city's reconsideration and allotting those additional 18,000 hours of growth. But the problem with that is that, and this may blow your mind here, but there are actually 140,000 hours of service upgrades outstanding right now.
That's $140,000
hours.
I'm sorry, hours. $140,000. $140,000 hours. Like, is that yearly?
So that's the number.
Okay.
Of service upgrades outstanding.
Okay.
And even bigger number to blow your mind, there is an additional 184,000 hours of service that would be required on top of that number in order to enhance frequencies of routes that would feed the East and South Rapid Transit corridors.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So taking those numbers, if you add those together, that is over 300,000 hours of service upgrades that would be required.
So that requires buses and that requires operators.
Buses, operators, money to deal with supplies, to deal with servicing these buses, all of that good stuff is rolled into that.
Right.
So as I'm sure you can appreciate, what does the next 2 years look like for us? Well, I mean, the resulting five-year service plan is going to prioritize upgrades to fit within the allotted growth budget of 18,000 hours per year. Now, 18,000 times 4 is not over 300,000.
No.
So we're in a little bit of a difficult position here. Mm-hmm. And again, is anybody at fault for that? No, because...
I disagree, but we'll talk about that
in a second. But I guess when it comes to this current budget cycle...
Yes, current budget cycle,
specifically,
no.
Because again, you know, the library faced cuts, arts faced cuts, you know, loads of really important initiatives faced cuts. So should the city have somehow found a way to give us like over 300,000 hours? No. But at the same time... That's what we're up against here. So 18,000 times four versus 300,000 plus.
So here's what I would say to that. When you say no one's at fault, I think that there is an at fault here. And that would be we've underfunded our transit service in this city for decades.
And so that, now that part's true.
And now we're paying the piper. And I know we don't want to throw all the upgrades on at the same time and throw every, because we don't want to mess around with the tax base. I get that. But we're paying the piper for decades of underfunding of the transit service. And this is the result we're in now with a transit service that, frankly, and I don't know if you dispute what I'm going to say here, is simply not good enough. It's not good enough.
No.
No. And so, but a transit service that's good enough costs money. And we're behind the eight ball because we've been underfunding it for too long. And this is the situation we find ourselves in.
Absolutely. But I guess what the point I'm trying to make here is this wasn't going to be solved this budget cycle.
Yeah.
Not even close. Right. I think that everyone involved faced something very difficult. And I don't want to inappropriately blame anyone here for this budget cycle. Mm-hmm. But absolutely. I mean, there has been limited investment in transit growth over the last number of years, preceded by zero increases for a number of years. So we talked about the 18,000 hours for 2024. Now, if you want to put that in comparison, so Waterloo Region for 2024 is at 50,000 hours in growth. Okay. Brampton is adding 108,000 hours in 2024. So, I mean, our city is obviously not the size of Brampton, but I think Kitchener-Waterloo area is fairly...
Pretty comparable.
Right, fairly comparable.
It's not perfect, but good.
Yeah. No, but close enough. Yep. And if you remember, our original ask was 25,000. So half.
Right.
For a similar size city. And, you know, base budget increases in 2024, those were the results of the commission utilizing a combination of also provincial and federal relief funding, as well as internal reserves to cover the inflationary pressures that we experienced during the multi-year budget period. So when you're looking at, well, can you find some extra room in your base budget? No, there's no wiggle room there. And I think that was what the original argument was. So comparatively speaking, are we behind? Yes, we've had chronic underfunding of this organization for a very long time. We're still chronically underfunded, especially in comparison to other cities in, you know.
Oh, it's very.
In Southern Ontario.
You can put all the charts out you want. It's very clear. London's close to the bottom with every comparable municipality in the province.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're doing our best. So we've approved actually an 18% fare increase in January. So riders are continuing to fund their share and, you know, shoulder their share of the burden there. But I mean, a couple of things to consider there. Number one, there's only so much we can do in terms of fare increases because if the service isn't there,
right?
Why would you pay more?
Right.
Right.
What's it now? $3.25?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So if you,
I was on the bus. Yeah. I was on the bus this past weekend with my son. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So I mean, but again, if you're increasing it more than that, but you can't get a bus to take you from point A to point B to get you to work or school or wherever it is you want to go, why would you pay that?
Yeah.
So there's only so much we can ask consumers to pay before they start looking at us and pointing the finger and saying, okay, but where's the value for this service here?
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair. So it's almost I don't even want to say it's a chicken or an egg situation because we know what comes first. What comes first is you have the buses on the roads that go to where people want them to go. And then people will presumably want to get on the bus. So bus rapid transit is going to be part of that. And what is that rollout going to look like as the budget is currently set up? Because you said, hey, we don't have enough hours to make that happen the way that we're hoping to. So we spent a lot of money on construction, and you drive down Wellington, you see it. You drive downtown, you see it. Drive out in the East End, you're seeing it. We spent a lot of money on construction. Are we going to actually have buses on the road that go on those spots?
Oh, let me check my crystal ball.
Okay.
But like I said, 184,000 hours, that's a lot.
It is.
And in terms of, so part of the review that I was talking about, that November 2023 review, and that's currently underway. So We're looking at these requirements as well as potential route restructuring to see if we can try to kind of go that way in light of the decision not to proceed with the North and West corridors. So that might be a potential way to try to help meet that demand. But I would definitely expect that one of the key priorities in the five-year service plan is going to be ensuring that we are prepared as we possibly can for this rollout. But again, looking at the number of service hours that we would need, is it going to be perfect? I would be a very irresponsible chair if I said yes.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're going to do the absolute best that we can. This is obviously a very important initiative, as you've said, a huge amount of money and time and disruption, and the whole shooting match has gone into this plan. We definitely want to make sure that we are doing our part to enact it, but are we going to get there with the resources we have? That's a very good question, and my concern is we might not quite hit it.
So what they would say, and I actually talked to the mayor about this after the budget, he would say, hey, we've given LTC their biggest budget number ever, and this is the largest number of dollars for a raise that council's given LTC since whenever. So huge number of dollars. They would say, okay, how come you haven't been able to figure this out within what we've given you here? What would your response be to that?
Again, Kitchener-Waterloo.
Yeah.
Double our original ask. Giving us a big budget or a budget that's comparatively larger than what we've had in the past doesn't get us to where we need to be. That's like essentially saying, well, I've given you a raise, okay, but cost of living?
Yeah.
Is it a living wage? I mean, if you go from making $5 an hour to six, is that a living wage? Does that help you?
It's still the most you've ever
made. No, it's still the most you've ever made. And maybe if you're, you know, 10 years old and babysitting, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But is that a living wage? Absolutely not. So comparatively speaking, that $1 increase doesn't really matter. It's a drop in the bucket. It's not going to get you to where you need to be.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand that part of it. What do you think then happens? And again, I'm asking you to look into the crystal ball here. It's going to be an awkward conversation if we have all these nice, shiny BRT lanes out and there's not going to be any buses on them. Do you think that there's a situation where, hey, maybe council has to revisit the LTC budget in the four-year cycle? Or how does that work, do you think? Because if the lanes are there, there's got to be buses on them. Otherwise, there was no point in doing any of this.
Well, I think Kitchener-Waterloo had that exact same problem when they were implementing the light rail, if you recall that situation.
I do. I grew up there.
I know
the story. Yep.
Yeah. So I would say it's going to be substantially more than an awkward conversation.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with, you know, the business closures that were experienced there and all that good stuff. When you're dealing with even just the sheer inconvenience that people are experiencing trying to deal with all of this construction, I think it's going to be a substantially more awkward conversation. But here's the difficult part. So when we were originally looking at ways to work with City Council in terms of getting us some growth dollars for conventional service, one of the things that was put to us, well, can you just look at assessment growth? And the answer to that is no. And the reason for that is because that money is going to have to be used to cover the police budget. Now, wrong or right, doesn't really matter how you frame it, but the assessment growth dollars are not going to be there for us. So in terms of looking at revisiting the budget, I mean, possibly, but I'm just not sure where that money is going to come from. And that would be my concern there, because it doesn't seem like that was...
They may have to do something.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Because again, we don't want to be the organization that says, yep, we have all these nice shiny bus lanes, but we can't put buses on the routes. We don't want to do that. We absolutely want to make this work. But yeah, the city might need to help us a little bit.
Right. So you would reject the assertion that, okay, you've not been efficient enough with the dollars you have. Would you reject the assertion that the routes as currently set up are not efficient enough? Or is that something that you might, like, would you be willing to consider that depending on where this audit goes?
I mean, again, we do that exercise regularly internally. So in terms of, are there efficiencies to be found? You know what? There very well may be an efficiency or two that is found. And if someone was able to provide us with that feedback, I think we would absolutely welcome it, because we want to be as efficient as we possibly can. But are the current routes as efficient as we can be? It is our belief that, you know, the routes are sound. They're well thought out. They're well planned. Could there be improvements? Absolutely. We could always make improvements. But again, we're facing a shortfall of 140,000 hours. Yeah. So the routes that we have are what we can do now. Now, we are going to be actually approving some improvements at the meeting tonight.
Okay.
Are they going to be astronomical? No. But just to give you an example of that, so we're looking at frequency improvements on routes 5 and 10. We're looking at route modifications to 17B and 20, as well as schedule adjustments to 19 to improve schedule adherence. So those are some things that we are doing. But again, we got to play within the money and the hours that we're given. So could we have more routes? Could we have more efficient routes? Could we have more buses on certain routes? Could we have express buses? Could we do all of these things? Absolutely. But we need the hours.
So that's $140,000. I keep saying hours. It's hours. 140,000 yep. hours.
Yep.
That a bus needs to be on the road every year for us to get to where we want to be with this. Is that essentially what
so
we're saying?
So that 140,000 is just the number of hours, period. So it's not, we don't need to do that every year. That's just what we need to catch up.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying multiply 18,000 over 4 years. What do you get? It's not 140.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So
there's a shortfall no matter what.
Yeah. There's certainly a shortfall.
But the other thing I think that's important to consider, and again, let me check my crystal ball here on these exact figures, but there's a strong possibility that this is going to get worse rather.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason for that is the upward pressures from the population itself, right?
Absolutely.
We have two major world-renowned post-secondary education institutions in this city. We are growing the industrial area, making business cases to major corporations to come here. We have loads of people who have decided London is much nicer than Toronto. There's actually billboards in Toronto telling people to come here.
I would question the the effectiveness of that, but people are coming
here
regardless.
You can't tell me you haven't seen those.
Oh, I've seen them, but I've made fun of them on the radio, but that's neither here nor there.
No, but yeah, the point
they exist.
The point I'm trying to make is, though, is our city is growing, and so it's 140,000 hours now. What's it going to be a year from now? Again, I can't give you the exact number on that. It's impossible to tell, but there's a significant possibility that it is going to get worse. And so it's not a question of, you know, are there going to be service cuts? It's a question of it's going to feel like it. So let's take a really busy route, say going down Richmond Row, trying to get young professionals to work, trying to get students to campus, trying to get people to Masonville Mall area, etc. With the infill development that is going on downtown, you've got a major increase in population there. So if the buses are the same, but you have extra people there wanting to take the bus, you know, you could have several buses drive by you before you can find one that's available to accept you as a passenger. And so the problem with that is, like, are we cutting services? No, but is it going to feel like service cuts? Absolutely, especially if you're a habitual user of the service who's now dealing with, there's a significant number of additional people that also want to use this service, and now I can't get to school on time.
Yeah, and then you're going to be trying to figure out something else. I want to ask about Western and Fanshawe real quick, because you mentioned
that. Absolutely.
So those students have bus passes, essentially, that comes with their tuition. When do those agreements come up with those two? I know I didn't tell you I was going to ask you about this, but it's popped into my head. When do we get to renegotiate those? Because I know there was some criticism from the city about, hey, maybe those deals were not necessarily done with the best financial outcomes for the commission.
So I believe those are renegotiated every 4 years. Okay. And just to answer that criticism, we want to look at the 80-20 rule. Okay. So again, London, as much as I would love for this not to be the case, London is very much a commuter city.
Oh, God.
And you know this, right?
Yep.
We have no expressway. You know, we have crazy traffic problems everywhere you look. Most people tell students, if you want to live in London, you got to get a car. So not every student is actually taking the bus.
Right.
If you look at what students are taking the bus more than the value of their bus pass, it's actually a very small percentage. The bulk of them are either not using their bus pass at all or are using it so infrequently that it's actually more expensive, I guess, per trip for them than actually just like getting a ticket.
The $3.50 you threw into the thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so in terms of, you know, we should be charging students more, I don't really think that's the answer from a number of perspectives. And the first one being, we can't not have a partnership with these two major university institutions, number one. Mm-hmm. Well, post-secondary institutions, because I guess Fanshawe is kind of a hybrid at this point. Number two, again, not that many students are contributing to the pressures we're talking about here. It's, you know, again, the 80-20 rule. There's a small percentage of them that, yes, are exceeding the value of the pass, but the rest of them are taking it, you know, to go downtown on a weekend or something like that. And then otherwise they're taking a car to school.
We hear all the time, okay, all the students live on Bruffdale. Those students are not taking the bus to school.
Well, if they were super lazy, maybe, but I think most of them are walking.
Yeah,
most of them are walking. Absolutely.
Yeah. So therefore, I get that not everyone's taking it all the time, but I know that was one of the things that was discussed. I want to mention one more thing, and this is a comment you had in the media. You told my friend, I believe, Matt Travathick, this, who works over at CBC London, that you had some concerns about some of the things that were said about LTC administration. What were your concerns? What did you not like to hear?
I just think that the narrative going out is a little bit irresponsible because we are dealing with people who are not politicians. They're not public office holders. They're not elected to their positions. Mm-hmm. They are.
But these are still well-compensated positions.
Absolutely.
On the public. You
know, absolutely. And frankly, as they should be.
Right. Oh, I've got no problem with that either. But I think that with that good compensation, part of that comes with you get some public criticism as part of the job.
Sure, but the thing is these people can't defend themselves. So if somebody gets out into the media and says, you know, the CEO is terrible, okay, but she can't defend herself as somebody who is in the position that she's in. And
so are you talking about did someone on council say that
I'm just using that as an example.
Okay.
So you're criticizing a senior leadership team that has no ability to defend themselves in the media based on the positions that they hold, without actually giving proper criticism. And this is coming from a place of, you know, if you're saying somebody is bad at their job, you can't just say somebody's bad at their job. You have to identify
what you're not doing.
Yeah. What is the issue then? Mm-hmm. Identify that. And if you can't do that, that's a completely irresponsible comment to make. And it's very disrespectful to people who are working extremely diligently and doing a very, very difficult job with very little resources.
Right.
And
so we're talking about something that Sean Lewis said. I don't even know which comment that you're referring to. Is this something Sean said or somebody else at council that said that you didn't like?
What I'm gonna say it in aggregate. Basically, there were a number of comments saying that, you know, there was no faith in the LTC.
Right.
What does that mean?
I remember something like that being said a few times by a few people.
Exactly. Okay. So what does that mean? That does not mean you don't have faith in our bus drivers.
Right.
That does not mean you don't have faith in our mechanics. That means you don't have faith in the leadership team of LTC. Okay. Why? You can't make comments like that levying, you know, blanket criticisms about hardworking individuals who have no real ability to defend themselves in the media without saying, okay, we have concerns about how you're spending your money. Here's how we think we can be partners to do better. Or, okay, we have concerns about these routes. You need to be specific and you need to work with our senior leadership team to fix those issues, because there's not a single person on our senior leadership team that is approaching this from a place of adversity or lack of cooperation. Mm-hmm. They want to do the best job that they possibly can for Londoners, because frankly, being on the senior leadership team of a major organization like this that is a public service can be a thankless job, mm-hmm. because no matter what you do, you're not going to please everybody. There's always going to be somebody telling you that you're terrible at what you're doing. It can be a real thankless job. So they're not sitting there thinking, you know, I don't want to cooperate or I don't want to be better. So levying comments like that is just completely irresponsible and contrary to, you know, a positive, healthy working relationship. There is no doubt that there are major improvements needed. I mean, I just went through the numbers with you.
Yep.
100%. We'll be the first ones to say it. Yep. We definitely have some work to do here. But we need to be partners with the city, not butt heads with the city.
Right.
We need to be partners with city council, not butt heads with city council, because we need each other.
Right.
We absolutely need each other. So, yeah, that makes me very frustrated. Sure. And it, you know, frankly, makes me question the responsibility of comments like that.
Okay. So we're questioning people's responsibility here. Do you want to name names?
No.
Okay.
Because I'm not going to be the person that, you know, does the thing that I'm saying is inappropriate.
Okay.
What I would like to say is that healthy criticism, healthy identification of areas for improvement, absolutely bring it on. Important part of the dialogue in terms of making sure that the best possible service is being delivered. But making personal attacks against people who cannot defend themselves, not acceptable.
I don't recall hearing any personal attacks. And I haven't watched every single debate, I'm going to say, but I haven't seen any in the media. So I haven't heard any personal attacks. That's where I'm a little bit confused there.
Again, I don't want to get into the weeds on that.
Okay.
But I will say that there were certainly some things that I found to be personal attacks that I found very offensive. And I don't like that type of politics. That's, you know, I've been in politics a long time, and that's not the brand of politics that I sort of grew up with. And I don't like that brand of politics. What I do like and what I really respect is cooperation. So, you know, there are a number of city councilors there who absolutely are holding our feet to the fire and keeping us accountable from a place of collaboration. Mm-hmm. And that approach is perfect. Let's work together. Let's get this done. Let's do a good job for Londoners. 100%. I'm not saying don't offer fair criticism, because that would be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. What I am saying is keep the punches above the belt and let's work together and get this done.
All right. Fair enough. And obviously the audience themselves can go and go through the debates and decide what they think is and is not above board.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about paratransit before we go.
100%.
So that was one of the big issues, obviously, leading up to this. And I think that kind of opened the door here for some of the harsh criticisms that were levied at London Transit. Now, I'll be honest, I was one of the people levying harsh criticism surrounding the paratransit situation. I don't think that was handled particularly well. There is funding in this budget cycle to improve paratransit. Mm-hmm. How is that going to work? How is that going to make the paratransit system better?
Okay, so I'm going to address that, but I'm going to address your first point as well.
Sure.
Could we do better with paratransit? 100%. It is completely valid to suggest that we could. There's nothing wrong with saying that. Everyone on our commission agrees with that. In fact, mm-hmm. if you remember, when Commissioner Ruth was the chair, she actually brought a motion forward that specifically sought to have a member of either the disability community or an advocate to sit on the commission to help us make those improvements.
And here's Jackie.
So, absolutely. So 100%. I agree with everything.
Jackie Madden, to be clear, if you're listening.
Yes.
Don't know it's Jackie Madden.
Thank
yep.
you. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have members of that community who diligently attend our meetings. Every single meeting, they are there. We know them by name, mm-hmm. to keep us accountable. And I think that that's really important. So saying, yes, you can do better is absolutely valid. Now, talking specifics about what we got. So we got 10,000 hours in service improvements. So what that's going to result in. So we have mm-hmm. three extra vehicles during weekday operations. We're going to have one vehicles on Saturdays and two on Sundays. And then once fully implemented, the incremental service is going to result in the provision of approximately 20,000 additional trips.
That's good. That's what we want. We want to see more trips. Online
Absolutely.
Booking system. What's going on with that?
Okay. So we did approve an upgrade to a replacement system at the February meeting. It's going to cost just south of about $500,000. So specifically $497,000.
Sure.
So we are also, like we said, we're looking to redo the scheduling system for specialized service, and the new system is going to provide for online booking, live vehicle tracking. So this should significantly enhance the customer service experience.
Yeah, you know where your vehicle is. When
exactly.
It's coming to
get you. So if there's a delay or something's running behind or anything like that, that should make it a little bit easier. Now, is it going to be perfect? No, because there are a lot of members of that community who might not, you know, they might need to use a telephone. So is it going to be a perfect solution? No, but it's certainly going to help.
Sure.
So we're absolutely trying to, again, add trips, make this more user-friendly, because this is a population that is underserviced. We recognize that. We recognize we have to do better.
So last summer when this was going on, I remember Kelly Pileschny telling council that this was over $1 million to get the booking service upgraded. Now he's saying it's $497. Mm-hmm. What's changed since last summer with that? Why is that a different number now than it was back in July? Was that outlined at the commission?
Just looking at different options. Again, we're always looking to try to keep costs as reasonable as we can. So just looking at different options, different ways of going about making these improvements, working mm-hmm. with potential service providers, that sort of thing.
Do you think that the paratransit booking system and the paratransit system in general has always been AODA compliant, in your opinion?
I think that it's compliant.
It always been like, say, in the last year?
Yes.
Okay.
And we've actually gone through this exercise of, so the way that legislation works, just give you the 40,000 foot view here. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, certain reviews that have to be undertaken. There's certain benchmarks that have to be met, all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And our organization does work very diligently to make sure that those targets are met. We do get a lot of questions about that. There are certainly differences of opinion on
there's
on
a professor of disability studies over at King's that would fundamentally disagree with you on this.
100%.
Do you understand Jeff's opinion and where Jeff's coming from? This is Dr. Jeff Preston, by the way. Do you understand where Jeff's coming from on that?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I would disagree.
Okay.
And again, we have had questions come to the commission that the senior leadership team has answered to hopefully explain how we have met the obligations under the legislation. I think, you know, there's a continued disagreement on many of those points. But again, I think having the conversation, even though maybe not everybody is walking away agreeing or being on the mm-hmm. same page, is really important, because regardless of whether, you know, there's a departure from obligations under the legislation, at the end of the day, it's important that we're providing a service that meets the needs of that population. So yep. There's a huge difference between being compliant with legislation and what that looks like in practice.
Right.
So I think even if, from our organization's perspective, we are compliant, but the ways we can do better, absolutely. I think that, you know, Mr. Preston should continue to hold, or Dr. Preston? Dr. Preston. I think that would be more appropriate. Yeah, should continue to identify those and continue to hold our feet to the fire and hold us accountable, because that's how improvements are made. And, you know, I can sit here and talk about this as someone who is not a part of that community. Mm-hmm. So,
Who are using it are the ones that are going to decide whether it's good enough.
Exactly. And so having his feedback is invaluable, because I can sit here and say this, but again, I don't face mobility issues. So it's fine for me to say that, but I've never experienced having to, you know, board a bus in a wheelchair, for example, mm-hmm. right? I've never experienced that personally. So I think it's really important that we hear from the people who actually do have that experience. So, you know, I'm not going to say that we're not compliant with the legislation. I believe that we are. But nevertheless, if Dr. Preston feels we're not, he should tell us.
Right.
He wrote you all a letter. And he should keep telling us, because, again, I'm not living that experience. And so I feel like my opinion on that is significantly of less value than someone who is. And I'd much rather hear their perspective than me trying to guess.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And I think that there is some room for introspection here. Would you agree with me if I were to suggest that, hey, perhaps that was not handled the best last summer when Jeff's letter came out and the whole thing happened? And like not just for me, and this doesn't have to be about me, but my colleagues in the media, we had a hard time tracking down the general manager. She didn't really want to talk with us about this. Would you agree with me that maybe was not the best comm strategy? Again, I know it's not your job to decide who the general manager calls back and who she doesn't. But did that make it a little bit worse, the fact that this kind of got out into the ether and there wasn't really a response from the commission for a while?
See, that's where I think I would disagree a little bit. Okay. I don't think that there wasn't a response.
Okay.
So a couple of things that are important to bear in mind here. So number one, the commission's kind of funny, right? Because we're a governance mm-hmm. board, but we sometimes help with operational stuff. Like, we're not, it's not the typical bifurcation that you might see with a private board, like a hospital board, right, or something like that. But again, operationally, we don't make decisions about comms at the commission. Right. So that's the first piece. Second piece, when it comes to, you know, the response, again, I saw the responses that were provided. So I don't think that there wasn't a response. I think that, you know, sometimes things are answered or not answered for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't dictate that. There could be a number of reasons why that did or didn't happen. I personally don't have any information about that. But the responses that I saw, I found them to be fairly comprehensive. I didn't feel like we were lacking in terms of addressing things. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking at the information that I'm receiving, right, and I'm assessing it based on my understanding of what's happening. So I'm not looking for additional information, so I can't speak to any of that. But from what I saw, I felt informed with our response.
And that's fair. And, that, you know, I appreciate the response on that. Is there anything else, Stephanie, that you want to add on this before we wrap up our conversation here? Because I said that we'd be like 20 minutes to a half hour and around 45 minutes. So I apologize for taking up more of your time. This is a good conversation, though.
No, know what? I'm always, hey, the one thing you have to be real careful here is you never give a lawyer a microphone without a time limit.
Hey, I'm
we'll talk all day.
I'll talk for another hour.
We'll talk all day, man. You got to be really careful with that.
I'll talk for another hour if you want.
I mean, the best is when I'm, you know, doing college lecturing because I have a captive audience for like 3 hours and it's great.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing that I would like to say here is I think that there are some relationships that need to be mended. And again, I know you would like me to get into detail about that. I'm not going to do that. But
I think, though, if you're going to say that into a microphone, we got the lawyer with the microphone here. If you're going to say, OK, we've got to mend some relationships, doesn't it do service to getting those relationships mended if we start by identifying which ones need to be mended? Is that not fair for me to say?
Yeah, right. You've called my bluff. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go there. I think that and I'm just going to say I have a lot of respect for Sean Lewis. Prior to this situation, we've had a really good relationship. I think that there are some relationships that need to be mended. I would say that that's one of them. Looking at this, do I think that he is, you know, coming at this from a place of, you know, malicious intent? No, I don't. But
I think he might just be a guy who's a deputy mayor of the city, doesn't think the transit system is good enough.
Right.
Now, one could argue about looking inward as far as for council,
but take that point. Yeah. Okay. He's right.
Yep.
It's not good enough.
Right.
Because of all of the reasons that we've talked about today.
Yep.
Not the fault of our senior leadership team. A lot to do with chronic underfunding. A lot to do with...
I would agree that's villain number one, is decades of chronic underfunding.
But villain number two is an exploding population, creating significant upward pressures on the system as well. And so I think that if we mend that relationship and approach this, because I think we can all agree things need to get better. There need to be improvements. Nobody is disagreeing on that fundamental point. So what I think needs to happen here is I think we need to work together, mend this relationship, and get this done. Because if we do that, Sean's a smart guy. Our senior leadership team are very intelligent and very hardworking. You know, the mayor's a smart guy. We can all get together and get this thing done. We can work together collaboratively and we can fix this. And that's what I think we need to do here. I don't think that we need to litigate this in the media.
I disagree.
Yeah, I don't. I know. Well, you wouldn't have a show if we weren't litigating this in the media. But I just,
everything should be litigated in the media. Every single thing we do as a society.
You think I should switch to a political pundit instead of a lawyer?
You can do both.
Yeah. You can ask my firm about how they feel about that.
Okay.
But no, I don't think we need to do that. And I guess what I would hope, you know, and I think that if we can work together on this audit, if we can be good partners on this audit together, what I would hope is we can mutually identify things we can do better. We can mutually identify ways to get the money to do those things better. And then let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's stop fighting about this. This argument is a little bit ridiculous from my perspective. Let's stop that. That's not helpful.
Okay.
It's distracting.
Okay.
And it's taking away from, you know, it's taking up everybody's time and resources here to deal with a stupid argument instead of actually moving forward to address these very legitimate concerns.
What really, though, it's from council's perspective, I know that you don't like how some of the things have been phrased by multiple counselors.
Right.
But the end result is, hey, we're doing an audit, which everyone seems to be on board with.
So are we.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so are you guys.
Absolutely.
So therefore, as much as we may not like how we've gotten to this point, we're all okay with where we've arrived at.
Exactly. And that's why I'm saying, you know, let's mend this relationship because we all agree that service could be improved. We all agree audits are healthy.
Right.
We all agree that healthy criticism and legitimate opportunities for improvement are a good thing for a public service provider. We all agree on those fundamental points. So let's fix this relationship and let's move forward together.
I think that is a very, very good spot to leave our conversation, Stephanie. So thank you so much for coming in and doing this with us. I think this is really informative. We talk about LTC on the on this podcast quite a bit. Scott Collier is on the roundtable from time to time.
And my benchmate.
Yeah, there you go. That guy knows what's up. But
yes, he does.
It's very cool that you came in here and were willing to chat with me for 49 minutes. So thank you so much for doing this, Stephanie. I appreciate it.
No problem. Off to Black Walnut now.
Off to Black Walnut. I hope you enjoy your coffee or your whatever. I don't know. Maybe you're a tea person. But that's Stephanie Marentette, who's the chair of the London Transit Commission. That is all the time we have on this edition of the Craig Needles Podcast, which you can find at classicrock981.com and londonnewstoday.ca. You can also find it wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing to all that fun stuff with the Craig Needles Podcast, which, of course, is powered by our great friends over at Downtown London and the Covent Garden Market.
The Craig Needles Podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.